Good afternoon. My name is Doris, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the National MS Society Research Update conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to our host, Ms. Heather Lee. Ma'am, you may begin your conference.
Great. Thank you. And good afternoon, everyone. My name is Heather Lee, and I'm a member of the Society's National Development Team, and I'm delighted to welcome each of you to today's research teleconference. As valued friends and supporters, we are eager to have you participate in what should be an engaging and exciting discussion with our Chief Advocacy Services and Research Officer, Dr. Timothy Kutze, our Associate Vice President of Discovery Research, Dr. Bruce Bebo, and the newest member of our research leadership team, Dr. Mark Allegretta, our Associate Vice President of Commercial Research. Before we begin with today's discussion, let me first start by providing just a brief background on each of our guest speakers. Dr. Kutze has been a leader in the pursuit of innovative ways to move us closer to a world free of MS since receiving his PhD in microbiology and immunology in 1993. Dr. Kutze has contributed to the field of MS research in numerous ways, from his postdoctoral work researching the structure and function of myelin to ultimately helping to create programs such as the Society's Translational Research Partnerships in Nervous System Repair and Protection in MS, pioneering investments in commercial therapy development, and creation of a global alliance focused on research in progressive MS. Dr. Kutze recently took on the role of overseeing all of the Society's mission delivery efforts in advocacy, services, and research. In his role as Associate Vice President of Discovery Research, Dr. Bruce Bebo directs the Society's diverse portfolio of biomedical research focused on stopping MS, restoring function, and ending MS forever. Dr. Bebo came to the Society with 25 years of experience in biomedical research, including his own work investigating the role of hormones in immune responses to myelin. After receiving his PhD in immunology from Texas A&M University, he completed a Society-sponsored postdoctoral fellowship at the Portland VA Medical Center, and then served on the research faculty at Oregon Health and Science University. He also worked in the pharmaceutical industry, translating laboratory research into better therapies for autoimmune and inflammatory diseases. And finally, Dr. Mark Allegretta brings 28 years of experience in biotechnology and pharmaceutical operations to his role as Associate Vice President of Commercial Research. Mark earned his PhD in cellular and molecular biology from the University of Vermont and completed a Society-sponsored postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford University. Mark has held a series of positions in the biotechnology space, including program leader at Kinetics Corporation Palo Alto, where he led a team to develop a phase one trial in MS. Most recently, Mark was president, chief scientific officer, and co-founder of BioMosaics in Burlington, Vermont, where he dealt with all aspects of cancer biomarker development, licensing deals, and business partnerships. Before I hand things over to our research leadership, I'd like to let everyone know that, again, there'll be an opportunity at the end of today's call to pose any questions that you may have. When the time comes, the operator will instruct you further on how to submit a question. So without further ado, I'm pleased to hand things over to Dr. Kutze.
Thank you, Heather, and it's great to be with you and all of our friends and supporters on this call. It is always a pleasure to really come and get together with you and just share some of the exciting progress that is happening in MS research that really have their fruit in the generosity and support that each of you make to the Society. I'm also delighted to have two members of our research leadership team, Bruce Bebo and Mark Allegretta, It's a privilege to be able to lead such a great team, and Bruce and Mark in their leadership roles are really bringing rigor and focus to the efforts that we're making in both our discovery research and our commercial research portfolio. And I'll have a chance during this call to speak with each of them so that you can hear their own perspectives on what's exciting in MS research and the directions that we're taking there. As part of our conversation today, we're going to share with you, some updates on ongoing research and also some highlights of some recent significant investments that we've made in research towards our goal of stopping MS, restoring function, and ending MS forever. As we continue to these three goals, we're making significant investments and significant progress, and we're adding to that each year. And just in January, we committed nearly $29 million to new research projects, to 83 new research projects that were multi-year in length. They start this year, and several of these projects will go out through 2018 and 2019. And through those, we're going to be pursuing many exciting leads and really trying to create and more momentum and just go faster towards getting to those solutions that we want for people with MS. And so what I'll do today is just spend a little time with Mark and Bruce, asking them to share some perspectives from their experience, and then towards the bottom half of the hour, we'll have an opportunity to take some of your questions, because we want to hear from you as to what is on your mind and what are things that information that we can share with you about our research programs. So starting first with Mark. Mark, tell us a little bit about your role. What does it mean to be the Associate VP of Commercial Research?
Well, thank you, Tim, and thank you, Heather, for the opportunity to discuss some of the highlights of commercial research efforts at the MS Society. And first, let me say that I'm genuinely honored to be part of the team, and being a recipient of the National MS Society Fellowship, I'm also very glad to be able to say thank you to all of you who are responsible for funding these important formative research programs. My MS Society fellowship at Stanford University was clearly a very large stepping stone for my bioscience career, so I'm clearly grateful for that opportunity. My role as the Associate Vice President of Commercial Research at the National MS Society is to manage specifically projects that are funded to companies and to help accelerate the development of new drugs and diagnostics for MS, for improving lives of people with MS. And coming in, only recently starting with the MS Society over the past few months, it's been fascinating to look at the commercial research portfolio as a snapshot in time for where it stands today. And what is most impressive to me is the high quality of the applicants and the applications to Fast Forward. There is a remarkable diversity of companies and the attendant projects that they bring to us. And we see everything from small virtual startup companies that are run by very well-qualified pharmaceutical executives, some mid-sized biotech companies, and even some very large established public companies such as GE Healthcare. In particular, GE Healthcare is working on an interesting PET scan-based diagnostic imaging tool that specifically recognizes microglial activation, and this is very relevant because it may have potential as a biomarker of progression, something very important.
So,
yes.
So let me ask you, Mark, what are microglia?
Good question. So microglia are supporting cells within the central nervous system that essentially carry out an immune-like function. And when activated, they can lead to all sorts of problems in terms of, for example, generating reactive oxygen species and promoting potential damage within the CNS.
Okay.
And so other examples of companies that we have that are significant are public companies such as Acadia Pharmaceuticals and they are working on an estrogen receptor beta agonist, and another public company called Athersys, which is based out of Cleveland, that has a promising stem cell therapy. So as you can imagine, we're very pleased to have very credible companies come in seeking to enter the MS space and carry out some really well-done research with very high degree of integrity.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this about Athersys. So that, you know, I know there's a lot of interest in stem cell therapies, I just wondered if you could elaborate a little bit more about what that program is and sort of where are they now in terms of the project that we funded with them.
So Athersys' approach is to take a product that they're calling MultiStem, which is an allogeneic stem cell product. Essentially, they're looking at mixed lymphocytes from different individuals, and the aspects of those lymphocytes is that they promote new regeneration of certain types of tissues depending on what's needed. And so this is a broad platform technology that they have. They have applied this in some other diseases as well, such as ulcerative colitis, and have had some promising results. And so that study with Fast Forward has been done in collaboration with Dr. Robert Miller, and they've made extraordinary progress to date. And again, given that they're a public company with quite credible resources available to them, we have a lot of promise for their ability to move the project forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question that, you know, I know I get from time to time is, so we're funding companies through Fast Forward, and it's great to invest in commercial research. And so how does that connect to the society's other researchers and all the other, you know, all of our other connections in academic research? Are these two folks working in silos, or are they interconnected in any way?
Yeah, that's a great point, Tim. Clearly, another function that we carry out at Fast Forward is to make connections. And what we see is that many of these companies have close ties to researchers and clinicians that are funded through the regular research and fellowship programs. So actually, sometimes we may see an intriguing corporate opportunity and provide that connection for them so that they have the proper clinical context for their drug development program. So we're very enthusiastic about the fact that we can provide these connections and tie in to the other funded research at the National MS Society.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what that carries into is the fact that with the connections to many of the clinical scientists that are funded through the society, many of the opportunities that we see within Fast Forward are already translating into projects that are ready for use in human clinical studies. So, for example, I mentioned the estrogen receptor beta agonist from Acadia. We also have another company called CaroBio, which is based out of Sweden, that has estrogen receptor beta agonist. And another aspect is that we are seeing other work in the retinoid receptor agonist area. And the interesting aspect to these is that now that the society has been looking more and more to neuroprotection and nerve repair, we're seeing some compounds that have been in the clinic in other disease areas for central nervous systems where neuroprotection and repair are important. So there's sort of a cross-training effect to these other programs coming in that, to our benefit, puts them closer to being ready for being into the clinic.
Oh, that's great. Well, I want to ask you also, it sounds like a number of the programs that we're funding through Fast Forward and the commercial programs are aimed at sort of disease modification, perhaps restoring function. You know, people with MS also live with symptoms like spasticity and sometimes, you know, cognition and pain. Are there any programs in the Fast Forward portfolio that might be addressing some of the symptoms associated with MS?
There are, Tim. So, for example, Canbex in the UK is working on a new treatment program for spasticity. And actually, there's another company called Axera that has what's termed a medical food, which is something that has been shown in the Alzheimer's disease setting to improve cognition. And so we have a study that's a clinical evaluation of their product in the setting of MS. So absolutely, these other areas that are very important to improving lives of for people living with MS are very much part of our portfolio within Fast Forward.
Mm-hmm. And then one other area that I know when I'm out, you know, traveling, people ask me, you know, it's this question about, you know, so if we can have treatments, you know, people are asking, you know, well, you know, we have 10 or 11 disease-modifying therapies, you know, which one is right for me, and how will we know whether or not, you know, a particular treatment is going to be the right one for me, and, you know, the, some frustration that perhaps there's not the tools that doctors can use to really have a conversation with a person who's living with MS about whether or not a particular treatment is right or not for them. And, you know, are there programs in our portfolio that are tackling this challenge about, you know, getting tools to physicians so that they can have a better understanding of what's happening in the disease?
Definitely. So in that field, there's a big interest and emphasis on personalized medicine, and to that effect, we do have projects that are aimed at improving diagnostics for patients with MS to tailor medicines to them, and this carries over actually into some therapeutic programs that we have that are specifically tailored to certain subsets of individuals with MS. And in the diagnostics area, there's a company called Diagenics, which is based in Maryland, that has developed a product called MS Precise, which is a cutting-edge molecular diagnostic test that is being used to identify patients with MS at the very first clinical presentation. And then similarly, when I mentioned earlier the PET scan imaging project with GE Healthcare, presumably that would also be something that would help aid in biomarker identification of MS patients and to help better stratify them based on their disease status, which ultimately we know is going to lead to more specific and better patient-tailored treatments.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, Mark. Well, I hope our listeners on the line have seen that, you know, with the Fast Forward portfolio, we have a robust investment in commercial research, and, you know, with Mark, we have a leader who sort of sees all the different connections and really trying to cover the waterfront in terms of what we do in terms of supporting commercial research. So thank you, Mark. Don't go away. We'll be coming back to you with some questions a little later on.
Okay.
I want to now turn to Bruce Bebo, our Associate Vice President of Discovery Research, who's going to, you know, give us some updates of what's happening in exciting research progress in our discovery research and some highlights from some of the new projects we just funded. So, Bruce, anything exciting going on?
Just a few things. There are a number of projects that I'm really particularly excited about. And I should also add, because Mark mentioned it, that that I'm also a former fellow, and I know, Tim, you are a former fellow of the MS Society, and we owe a debt of gratitude to everyone that helped get our careers started. So that's a great point to make, Mark. There are a bunch of projects I'm really interested in, and they fall into a few categories. And the first category are a couple of really interesting projects in the area of environmental triggers or effects of lifestyle on the risk of developing an MS. And the first one I want to talk about is from David Hafler, who's a professor at Yale University, also a former fellow, I believe a Harry Weaver fellow of ours.
He was.
Who's now a very, sorry,
he was
Tim, right?
He's a Weaver.
Former Weaver fellow, yep. Who's a thought leader in MS research at Yale University, who made an observation some months ago that made a splash, and maybe some of you recall hearing about this concept of high salt diet increasing the risk for developing MS. And this idea came from studying an animal model of MS, which is called EAE for short. We'll just leave it at that. And putting animals on this high salt diet increased their risk and increased the severity of this animal model that mimics a number of aspects of MS. And so this was really intriguing. It looks like the human immune system is sensitive to high levels of salt as well. And Dr. Hafler has put together a very interesting package of experiments and ideas to try to get a better understanding of how salt might be promoting immune responses that could trigger MS attacks or increase a person's risk for developing MS. So that is a really very interesting new project that we're supporting. Related to that is another project. This one is being led by Howard Weiner, who's at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And this is a project that's investigating the gut microbiota in MS. So let's define, what's the microbiota? So the human body, I have some kind of fun microbiota fun facts for you all. So the human body contains 10 times more bacterial cells than human cells. And the gut microbiome, all of the bacteria that live inside our gastrointestinal tract, contain at least 160 different species of bacteria that contain about 3 million different genes. This is 150 times more genes than we have in our own genome. Now, these bacteria live here in our gut and all over our body, but we'll talk specifically about what's happening in our gut for the purposes of this discussion. I mean, they help us digest our food, they protect us from pathogenic organisms, and there's growing amount of evidence that they play a role in certain medical conditions, including MS. And it's thought that this role might be caused by changing the behavior of the immune system. So Dr. Weiner has spent some time and energy and resources to investigate the microbiome of the gastrointestinal tract of the gut in people living with MS and in people that don't have MS. And he's found an intriguing and important difference in the makeup of the bacteria that live in the gut. And specifically, he's identified a family of bacteria that are called archaea that seem to be more prevalent in the gut of people with MS than in people that don't have MS. And this may have a role in increasing a person's risk for developing MS, or a role in regulating immune responses that are responsible for perhaps for relapses in MS. And so Dr. Weiner is studying the microbiome in more detail, this specific family of bacteria, this archaea bacteria, and how they might regulate immune responses and how changes in the microbiome might regulate MS. And then, again, in this category of triggers or environmental or lifestyle issues that could influence the risk of MS, is a really, really interesting project from Tim Vartanian, who's at Cornell University. And what Tim has found is a specific species of bacteria, actually subtype of a species of bacteria, called Clostridium perfringens. Now, Clostridium perfringens is a common bacteria. It's actually the bacteria that causes a lot of foodborne illnesses. But this particular type of Clostridium perfringens, a subtype of this bacteria, is usually not found in humans. It's actually found in ruminant animals like cows and deer and sheep and so forth. But he was able to isolate this bacteria from a person that had MS and was able to find evidence of infection with this bacteria in about 10% so far of people with MS that he's looked at, and no evidence of this infection with this particular bacteria in people without MS. And what's really intriguing about this finding is that if you were going to design an infectious trigger for MS, this would be the guy. So this bacteria makes a toxin that degrades the blood-brain barrier. This is the barrier between your blood, blood vessels in your brain, and the tissue in your brain that's critically important in protecting your brain from immune responses. This bacteria makes a toxin that breaks that barrier down, and it also, the same toxin also is poisonous to oligodendrocytes, the cells that make myelin. So it pokes holes in the blood-brain barrier, it damages the oligodendrocytes and releases myelin antigens or pieces of myelin that potentially could trigger or sensitize the immune system to your own myelin antigens. And then later on in life, some other event, perhaps stress or another kind of infection, could trigger this immune response to myelin. So this is a really intriguing potential infectious trigger for MS, and it's very, very early, and there's a lot more work to be done, but it is very, very interesting and intriguing finding that Dr. Vartanian's made.
Wow. So let's pause there, Bruce. So see, we've got salt. So I've got to cut out the salt. I'll need to get those probiotics to alter my immune system of those 160 different varieties of bugs in my gut. And then there's this whole thing, stay away from ruminants. I do actually just want to come back to sort of the story that you just told us about Tim Vartanian's work. So just walk us through that. You know, as I seem to recall from our conversations, this really started because here you had Tim Vartanian, who's a physician who sees people with MS, and he had, if I understand it, a person who was having a relapse, and it was a person who lives with MS, and he made these kinds of connections to put one thing together, you know, that led from one question to the next. Is that sort of how it happened?
Yeah, that's my understanding, and it's a really out of the box. If that's the right phrase, but very non-traditional thinking here. I mean, Tim's one of these guys, another Tim, who really thinks creatively and is a physician and a clinician, but also a researcher who made this interesting observation and understands what some of the major unanswered questions are in MS and put two and two together and has put a lot of resources to this really interesting story. It really is an out of the box, very potentially high reward with some risk associated with it as well.
Right. So then let's pivot over to Dr. Hafler and talk about the salt story. It's very exciting, you know, and I think what some people may lead to the question is like, okay, so then do I need to be, I live with MS, should I be cutting salt out of my diet at this point? Or, since these are mouse studies, are there other studies in humans that they're thinking about? Where does this work go in terms of what it means for people who live with MS today?
Right, So I don't think we're in a place where we would recommend a low-salt diet for the purposes of reducing either a person's risk or reducing for developing MS or the risk for relapses of MS, although we could all benefit from lower salt in our diets for a variety of other reasons. There have been some more recent published studies that have linked this salt levels with activity detected by magnetic resonance imaging in the nervous system, people having high salt diets had more activity, MRI activity, than people that were on a lower salt diet. And that's sort of a first sign of this connection between the observations made in the animal model of MS and actually in people with MS. And we have another project in the portfolio this cycle that is looking more at sort of health outcomes type research, epidemiology research, looking at that connection between salt and the diet and MS to try to understand that a little bit better. So approaching this both from a very molecular point of view, but also a population point of view as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Are there any other sort of interesting, projects that you think would sort of represent some key advances in our understanding of MS?
Yeah, there's a really a lot this cycle. Another one I really wanted to touch on was the grant from Peter Calabresi. So one thing we don't talk enough about, I think, is advances in methods and advances in technology that can help advance our understanding of MS and treatment of MS. And one of the, I think, big unmet needs or unanswered questions in MS is the relationship between MRI, the images we see on MRI and the information we get out of MRI, and the progression to disability. And those increased activity in the typical MRI scan doesn't always correlate very well with with symptoms and with progression, and that's a big unanswered question. And one possibility is that most of the imaging we do is of the brain, and it's not very often that we image the spinal cord. And it's well known that MS activity in the spinal cord is potentially responsible for a lot of the disability that we see in MS. But the spinal cord's tricky to image. It's much smaller than the brain. It moves when we breathe, and when you're in the MRI machine, it moves back and forth, and it's hard to keep your spinal cord still while you're imaging that. But Peter and his team have become experts in imaging of the spinal cord, and they collected some images about 5 years ago of a cohort of people with MS at Johns Hopkins. And he now wants to re-image that cohort, that group of people, and determine the relationship between the spinal cord images from 5 years ago and today with the degree of disability that those people have. And I think the spinal cord is one place that people are focusing their energy on and trying to develop better technology and better protocols for imaging the spinal cord. And I think that's going to be really important in understanding the relationship between the activity in the nervous system and the clinical symptoms that we see in people with MS. That the other, again, advance and focus on technology that I saw in our portfolio this cycle was a grant from Jesse Huizinga, who's at the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, and she studies the gait and balance deficits in people with MS. So walking, having problems with balance, with your gait, the way you walk, can be a big issue for people with MS. And understanding how both, let's say, maybe disease-modifying treatments or symptomatic treatments or even rehabilitation strategies might help improve gait and balance. Is a real big challenge for the rehabilitation community. And so what Jessie's working on is she's developing a wireless sensor technology that one could ultimately place in the home of a person with MS that would remotely monitor their gait and their balance in real time, constantly. So the way it works now is somebody goes into the neurologist and they get an exam, and this happens once every few months, and it's time-consuming, and it's not really easy to notice significant changes. But if you had this sort of wireless system built into your house or some type of accelerometer that you wore on your body that could monitor your walking and your activity during the course of a day in real time, has a potential to really greatly enhance our ability to understand how interventions like rehabilitation or even disease-modifying treatments could affect or improve balance and gait. So that's a real a leap and really good investment in technology that I think could make big difference in the lives of people living with MS.
Well, that's great. And I think what you see, you know, for those on the line, the breadth of the portfolio that the society has of going from, you know, figuring out salt and bacteria in the gut to potential trigger factors, and, you know, all the way out to wireless technology that can that we can use in the home that can be critical for people living their lives as best as they can. So Mark and Bruce, I do want to pivot just for talk about one other thing before we open up for questions. I know that a bunch of us, and about, I think, 15,000 scientists and neurologists are going to be descending on the city of Philadelphia in a couple of weeks to participate in the annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology, which is a large scientific meeting that happens every year that brings together, you know, so many scientists, and MS is a big topic these days at the AAN meeting, as we know it. And we know there's going to be some society researchers presenting there. Bruce, any exciting findings that are going to be that you're hoping to see there?
Yeah, no, I've had a chance to look through the presentations that are going to be made. It looks like a really exciting meeting. A couple of presentations that stand out for me. One is from a society-funded investigator, Rhonda Voskal. So Rhonda has been studying the effects of a pregnancy hormone called estriol in relapsing-remitting MS for a number of years now, and the society has been supporting a clinical trial of a combination of estriol with Copaxone that recently was completed and is going to be reported out at one of the plenary sessions at AAN. So we're all anxiously sort of on the edge of our seats waiting to hear how the results of this trial. The other trial that I'm really interested in hearing the results of is a trial using a helminth, a parasite, that was conducted by John Fleming, who's at the University of Wisconsin, and this is a trial that also is supported by the society. And the basis for this is related to a hypothesis called the hygiene hypothesis, which essentially involves all of us living now in a Western world in a clean environment, and this lack of exposure to parasites that used to be common a few hundred years ago has, you know, changed our immune systems in a way that makes us more prone to allergic reactions and more prone to autoimmune diseases. And perhaps exposing a person to these parasites might turn that around and reduce the immune response to, in the case of MS, to myelin. And so Dr. Fleming has actually finished a clinical trial where he was giving people milkshakes full of this parasite that they were drinking that he hopes would alter their disease course. And we are waiting also with bated breath. I know he's scheduled to present the outcomes from this trial in a few weeks at the AAN. Those are two of many others that I'm really looking forward to hearing the results of.
That's great. So we'll be taking in quite a bit of science, just so that folks on the line know. Bruce, I believe we're going to be blogging from AAN. Is that right? And we'll be providing updates on a daily basis. So we'll be writing about it. Mark, I know that in addition to going and taking in the science, we as a society staff do other work while we're at meetings like this. Could you tell the folks on the line some of the other work that we'll be doing while at that meeting?
Well, one of the things we're going to be doing is following up on one of our companies that was funded in a very early cycle for Fast Forward. The company's called Apitope. And they're extremely intriguing because they were one of the early candidates through the program, and they've done quite well to the extent that they've been able to secure some additional financing to develop their technology forward. So they have an alliance with pharmaceutical partner called Merck Serono, and their approach is essentially a very unique immune-based approach. It's a peptide-based personalized medicine approach that is aimed at inducing a specific tolerance to cells within the immune system that seem to be responding to certain components of the central nervous system, namely things like myelin basic protein, proteolipid protein, and myelin oligodendroglial protein. And so it's an approach that's been around for some time and has been quite well refined. And they've done a great job with the Fast Forward funding to get to the point where they can obtain this additional financing and go on. And what was intriguing to me about that was in one of the most recent discussions we had with them as a follow-up, they were doing a simple phase one study, which is, of course, just a safety and toxicity study, and they reported seeing some promising efficacy on MRI images, even though that wasn't the goal of the study. So we're very, very keen on seeing them. And then, of course, along those lines, we do use the opportunity to, again, connect with a lot of different companies that are working in this space, both small and large, and what we hope to do is to build on some of our existing relationships with pharmaceutical companies like we have had in the past, and to use these interactions to look at new ways to build collaborative opportunities for co-financing and to look at new ways to generate synergy for the opportunities that are out there so that we can combine forces, so to speak, put our collective minds together, and provide some synergy for developing more opportunities in this space.
Great. Yeah, and it will be a busy week. We'll be there beginning on April 28th and through Friday. So certainly, everyone be on the lookout for the updates that will be posted on our website for some exciting breaking news. And we're all looking forward to hearing the results of Dr. Voskal's Estriol trial. I know that many of our supporters are eagerly awaiting the outcomes from that clinical trial. And so you've seen on this call a wide range of our portfolio, and what we want to do now is open up the lines so that those on the call can pose their questions to myself or Bruce or Mark. And so I'll ask the operator now if she could give the audience our instructions of how they can pose a question.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number one. And we'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Okay, great. So while we're consolidating the Q&A roster, we'll prime the pump. Somebody emailed in a question from the Colorado-Wyoming chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about specific advances in technology that are getting us closer to solving the mystery of MS? Bruce or Mark, want to take a stab at that one?
I can take a first pass. I'm sure Mark has some ideas about that as well. I mean, I think, I mentioned a couple of projects, and I think a lot of advances in MRI technology are poised to happen in the near future. The ability to image myelin better and to image, let's say, activity happening in the cortical areas of the brain and the gray matter that we can't see in imaging, but we know are there when we look at sections of tissue from the gray matter, and how that is contributing to disability and MS, and how we can monitor that to help guide treatment and discovery of new treatments is a critical gap in technology that is getting a lot of attention these days. So we get a lot of applications looking at different MRI technologies. I had a really interesting visit recently with an MRI facility in Oregon, where they have the ability to refine images is partly related in the size of the magnet that these machines use. And I had a really fun visit at the Oregon facility where they have a machine that has a 12 Tesla magnet. The standard magnet in the machines in a hospital are 1.5 Tesla. This is a 12 Tesla magnet that can do just some incredible things, shielded by 1 million pounds of iron to shield the magnetic field around this magnet. My comment would be related to advances in MRI technology and where that's going to take us a few years from now.
Yeah, Bruce, great. I would just echo that too, because that's exactly the same thing that I'm excited about with the project with GE Healthcare. It's remarkable to me that a company like that can step into the space and that there is even the opportunity to develop a specific PET image agent that picks up microglial activation as a readout of neural inflammation. So that it's the same area for us. We're really excited about enhancements to MRI, both from technical instrumentation approach, but also from the reagent-based side of things.
Great.
Tim, I was just going to add, to add another topic there. I think also the idea of whole genome sequencing and exome sequencing. This is sequencing the whole genome DNA from people, or just the parts of the genome that are making the genes. And I mean, that's the next step in the evolution of genetics, understanding the genetics of MS, that I think that technology has advanced dramatically, and we're starting to explore whole genomes and exome sequencing in MS that I think we're going to see some fruits of that research pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Great, and I'll just point out to everyone on the line that when we refer to Teslas, and that's, a measurement of the strength of the magnet, not to be confused with the Tesla sports car that is being developed, just to be clear.
Yes.
Operator, are there callers on the line to ask questions?
Yes, sir. Our first question is from the line of Phil Yastrow.
Phil, welcome to the call.
Actually, that was my question about technology. I'm an engineer, so I'm glad that you got it. But no, that was my exact question about advances in technology, you know, whether it does have to do with things like MRIs or DNA sequencing or anything like that. But no, that was a really good answer.
Excellent. Well, Phil, we're glad you can join us. I, like Bruce and Mark, really do think that we can attribute a lot of the acceleration of getting many of these new therapies for MS to the introduction of MRI, and it gave us a powerful tool to be able to monitor what's happening in terms of MS lesions and relapses. So I'm excited about some of that next generation technology that really will be able to help physicians get real answers and give people with MS, you know, really understanding of what's happening in the disease. So thank you for your question.
Yeah, one step closer to getting the mystery solved.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you for joining the call. Let me ask if there's another caller on the line.
Yes, we have a question from the line of Donald Tyson.
Yes. Thank you.
Welcome.
My personal journey with MS started about 60 years ago and has been through relapsing, remitting phases pretty much. Stabilized now. I use a three-wheel cart. Actually walk a few steps with two canes. I helped pioneer the use of three-wheel carts for MS with the Amigo Corporation, Al Timi, who was the president of that company, who started out in his garage building a three-wheel cart, built a three-wheel cart for his wife who had MS, and was a plumber, but eventually he was so busy building carts for people that he closed his plumbing business and started Amigo. My question to you is that my disease is pretty well stabilized, or it is stabilized, I would say, in the condition that I'm in. What should I do? Is Avonex or any of these drugs the things? The only thing I used was Betaseron, the only drug I have used of all of the drugs, and I had a reaction against it. And so I quit it after a few months.
Yeah. So, Don, that's a great question, and that's a great thank you for sharing the story about the development of those three-wheel scooters. They're really, I see so many people using them, so it's just such a great example of entrepreneurship and really done out, I'm sure, out of a spirit of love for his wife. And it's so great that he was able to help so many people. You know, so first thing I'm going to stipulate is that I am not a physician. I'm, you know, a PhD type of doctor. But in cases like yours, what I do hear from other physicians and what clinicians will advise is that, you know, if you're stable now and, you know, not on any therapy, unless there's a reason to change that, probably no need to change at this point. You know, I do think that some of the work that we're helping fund in terms of the areas of, you know, exercise and rehabilitative strategies and potentially some of the treatments to restore some, you know, function are maybe options in the future that, you know, perhaps can get some function back. But, you know, I think the advice, you know, I've heard other docs, physicians provide is, you know, if things are stable now, don't mess with it, basically.
Thank you.
You know, so I think, and thank you also. I just want, I know that, you know, we've shared this so much with you, but, you know, for those who are on the line, Don has just been a tremendous supporter of the Society's Fellowship Program for, you know, a number of years. And, you know, certainly, you know, Bruce and Mark and I were all alumni of that program. And, you know, it was Don's generosity that helped us get the Tyson Fellows Conference going, and you know, it brings together our young talents every 2 years in conjunction with our national conference, and it's such a great experience for so many of our young fellows, and you know, they leave that conference energized. So, Don, thank you again for your generosity. That makes that possible.
Well, you're really certainly welcome. I think we all should do whatever we can to be of help and try to make a difference. You know, we're on this planet for a short time, and so we better make it count.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate that and look forward to seeing you at the next Tyson conference for sure. So let me ask the operator if there's any other callers on the line.
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay. You know, actually, my conversation with Doug just actually opened up another question that I realized that I had meant to ask. You know, training researchers is really important to the society. There's also we also focus on training MS specialists, because one of the big needs we have is getting more doctors who can see people with MS. And Bruce, I know that the society started off a new program to help really increase the number of doctors, MS specialists that are out there for that can see people with MS. Can you tell us a little bit about this new program and why it's so important?
Yeah, I'm happy to, Tim. Thanks for bringing it up. I mean, as you mentioned, the society historically has been a very strong supporter of training for physicians in the comprehensive care of people with MS. And until recently, our focus has been mostly involved in an individual clinical training award. So these are awards made to individual physicians that have a passion for wanting to learn more about how to treat MS. This last year, the Society launched a new program called the Institutional Clinical Training Awards. And these awards differ from the individual awards in that they're made to an institution rather than to an individual person. And this allows the institution to have more freedom to recruit fellows throughout the academic year. It provides more stability to the training program, because these are five-year grants, where our individual fellowships are usually 1 year, 2 years in length. It provides some flexibility that allows the mentor to create a customized training plan for, you know, that's tailored to the fellow's background and what their interests and career goals are. And we think this is going to help institutions become magnets for promising young physicians and clinicians that are interested in learning how to take care of people with MS. So this is a program, it's designed to complement our existing individual training awards and enhance our other efforts to increase the number of physicians that have the skills and experience to provide the highest quality of care for people that are living with MS. So this year, we selected 7 institutions to receive this award. This is in addition to the 6 individual clinical training awards that we were awarded in this application cycle. We're very excited about this new program and interested to see the impact that this program is going to have some years from now on the in the training of new clinicians with expertise in treating MS.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, and I think that you know, this program is a testament, you know, to the importance of, you know, bringing in new talent. When Bruce was making his remarks in our first segment, he talked about a young talent, Jesse Huizinga, who's a young researcher studying at the University of Kansas, who actually had a mentored kind of a fellowship similar to this one, specifically focused on rehabilitation specialists, because we need more rehab researchers. And so, you know, we are excited that, you know, these new institutional type of awards can really spur the training and get us more MS specialists, because there's such a tremendous need for more young talents living with MS. One last closing question that I'll address, and you know, I think I'll ask Bruce as well to comment, is we have you know, we've talked a lot about different treatments, but you know, we haven't talked a lot about progressive MS. And I know that the society is doing doing quite a bit of work in the area of progressive MS. Are there any significant initiatives in progressive MS that, Bruce, that you'd like to share with our callers? Because I know that this is an important topic for many of our listeners.
Yeah, that and Don's comments made me think about what we're doing in the area of progression, and you know, we really have recognized, you know, that there is an unmet need for developing strategies and treatments for people living with progressive disease, which we understand are probably close to half of people with MS living with progressive forms of MS. And we have no disease-modifying treatments for people living with progressive disease. And we need to fix this. We need to change it. We've recognized this some years ago and began an initiative called the International Progressive MS Alliance. And this is an alliance of MS societies from around the world and includes ourselves. It includes the MS Society in Canada and Italy and the Netherlands and the UK MS Society and the Multiple Sclerosis International Federation, all pooling our resources, our research support, our staff resources, to all focus on this area of progressive MS research. And we've assembled teams of thought leaders who have put tremendous amount of energy into developing a plan for addressing some of the big questions that need to be answered in progressive MS. And this plan has formed the basis of our strategies for developing new ideas and new technologies to address the problem of progressive MS. We recently had a call for applications for our first round of funding. This is, I was telling my colleague from Canada who helped us with a peer review committee meeting last week in London that we were making history, and I really feel that way. And this is the first international coordinated effort to support research around the globe in progressive MS. And Karen and I had the privilege of facilitating peer review committee meeting last week. And so this is the first of what we anticipate to be many efforts to support, and again, in a coordinated way with our sister agencies in other countries to really put some light on this issue of progressive MS. I'm really excited and honored to be part of that effort.
Great. Well, thank you, Bruce. And I think I'll say to our listeners there that the Alliance is just one part of a comprehensive approach that we're taking to tackle progressive MS through the National MS Society, and we'll certainly be reporting more to you in the coming years. So to bring the call to a close, we've had quite a ranging conversation around the breadth of our portfolio. I hope you've been able to see what the large scope of the Society's investment and research, and from, you know, the very early training of our fellows to discovering new opportunities and then taking them through commercialization, through fast forward, you've had a chance to visit with Bruce and Mark. And we, again, are thrilled that at the incredible support that all of you have given to the Society over the years that make all of this work possible. So thank you. And we will look forward to coming back to you in the future to report more on the progress the Society is making. Let me turn the floor back to Heather, who will bring our call to a close.
Well, thanks, Tim, and thank you so much to Bruce and Mark as well for taking the time to join us today. I know I speak for all of our participants on the phone when I say that I so appreciate your lively discussion today, and was candid and humorous and so very informative, and it's very exciting to hear about all the progress being made, so thank you. Before we close the call, I'd like to first encourage everyone to please visit the Society's new website to stay current on all of the Society's updates on MS research advancements. This gets updated almost daily, so please take a look. Secondly, I'd like to remind everyone that we actually have an upcoming opportunity to view a lively discussion as well of some top MS researchers discussing the topic of living well with MS on our next Society webcast. And so that will be scheduled for June 3rd, and there'll be more information coming out from the folks in your chapters on how you can get connected to that. And then finally, I'd like to thank all of you, our participants today, for joining us. Your generous support to drive this important research forward is just clearly helping us make so many strides towards stopping, restoring, and ending MS forever. So on behalf of everyone living with MS, we thank you. This concludes today's presentation, so thank you and have a great rest of your day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.